The Winners Club is the weekly podcast that shares the highlights and insights from some of the most meaningful and impactful conversations from the number one community on Clubhouse, The Winners Club.
Really privy to work with some great teams. In fact, the first team I worked with was the Kent cricket team, which was very interesting because I love cricket, but it was completely the opposite experience to what I thought it was going to be. But I think, James, what's really important to point out, even with individual athletes that I've worked with, they all have teams around them and they're only as good as the people that are around them. You know, and you often hear the greatest athletes who I have worked with, the first thing they'll say when they win is they want to thank their team, because we're only as good really as the people around us who support us. But obviously, having been involved with football teams, the first team I worked with was Cheltenham Town. You know, you've got to earn your rights. You've got to earn your stars. So Cheltenham was the first team, then Oxford United, which was fascinating, then Fulham, and then obviously the Arse, which was a bit difficult because I don't support them. But what an honour to be associated with a football team like that.
Who do you support?
Liverpool FC is hard as hell. United, Tottenham, Arsenal. Watch my lips and I will spell, because we don't just play, but we can rap as well. Liverpool FC.
Yes, baby. Yes, baby. Liverpool FC.
Oh, my good God. Okay, so here's a question. As a peak performance psychologist who is, you know, trying to make their client and their team and their players, you know, who I imagine become like really, really close to you, because obviously they're opening up and you're helping them, you know, achieve their greatest, fullest potential. How do you go into a dressing room on a Liverpool versus Arsenal day?
Well, that was one of the challenges that I had when Liverpool played Arsenal. I was with Arsenal and I think Michael Owen scored and I jumped up in the air. You know, there was something in me that was just inbuilt from the 7 years old. You know, everything I did as a child was, you know, I loved football. I loved Liverpool. I don't know why, because I lived in Northwest London. I should have supported Arsenal. I live equidistant between Arsenal and Tottenham. You know, I should actually probably have supported Tottenham, but I just associated with Liverpool. I just looked at them. I remember seeing Kevin Keegan and Kenny Dalglish and just thinking, these guys are brilliant. They're fantastic. I want to be like them. And I think as children, many of us did, you know, we wanted to be, we pretended. How many of us here played sport? And when we played sport, I'm going to be, you know, David Beckham. Not that I would have been David Beckham because I'm older than him. But, you know, for me as a child, I was always wanting to be my heroes. I loved sport. Sport was my life. That's the only thing I wanted to do, was to go outside, play cricket, play football, play anything, play tennis. I don't care. I just wanted to play. So when I was never that good to play at the highest level. But then when I got to work with some of the greatest athletes in the world, I just felt like the luckiest person in the world. And that's why when you hear, again, talking about Coach G, when you get to hear these stories, I come with this point of just so much curiosity of, how did you do that? What was that like? How did you overcome the adversity that you faced? Because you can learn so much from performers if you just ask the right questions. And I'm not shy of asking anyone any question, because my curiosity is ridiculous. It's insane how curious I am when I meet someone, you know, but even everyday people like you, you know, James, a little bit, and then hearing you talk last week about branding. So I want to know this person. I want to understand more of who this person is. And on top of that, I think, how can I help James? There's just something a bit crazy about me that I don't think it will ever go away. It's like, what can we do? How much better can we be? And that was always my attitude with sport. But I was a bit despondent when the first team I worked with, I was involved with a TV program on Channel 4 that was called Losing It. And it was all about, at the highest level of sport, why some people would choke, and why sometimes they'd choke and they'd come back from it. So there was a footballer called Lee Chapman who played for Arsenal, and he was terrible. Absolutely, he was awful. So they got rid of him. And he went to Leeds, and the next season he was player of the year. He got the golden boot. And we made this TV program and we interviewed a whole load of great athletes, people like Sally Gunnell, who most people here probably don't know who that is, but she is, to this day, the most successful British athlete in history. She was Olympic gold medalist, world record holder, Commonwealth British champion. And, you know, just that ability, we were able to speak to these people and ask them the questions to work out what was going on in their mind. It was fascinating. But we then had a phone in afterwards, and the coach of the new of the Kent cricket team was a guy called John Wright, who used to play cricket for New Zealand. And I love cricket. I mean, my first memory of my life was watching my dad play cricket. I mean, it's a stupid game. I don't know why I love it, but I absolutely love it. And when John Wright cricket, he played cricket against probably what I would say is the second best team in history, which was the West Indian cricket team, who were unbeaten for 15 years. Who's the best team of all time? Well, maybe we'll come to that. Statistically, it's the New Zealand rugby team. And then I'd say third for me was the Bulls, Michael Jordan's, the team that he won. But the reason I tell you this story is that John Wright called up on this phone in afterwards, and he was talking to one of my colleagues, and my colleague said, look, you better speak to Pete because he loves cricket. And I went and worked with Kent for 2 years. And when I walked into the dressing room for the first time, I was really excited that I was working with professional cricket players. You know, players, some of them, Aravinda De Silva the first year, and then Carl Hooper the second year. Again, for some people have no idea who these people are, but for me, they were just gods in what they do. But I was so disappointed because the energy in the room was just like, I thought I've gone into a morgue. I expected this higher vibration, but there really was. And I realized that it took me a time to realize that even at that level, there's only a few that really want to go and the extra mile and are prepared to talk about their weaknesses and their vulnerabilities and just want to get better. And I never forget this. If you don't mind, I'll finish the story. This is because I don't want to leave this out because I think it's of what I'm going to say, but I never forget when John Wright said this to me, and he used to open the batting for New Zealand. Opening the batting for New Zealand when the best, fastest bowlers in the world, they don't want to hit the stumps, right, to get you out. They don't want to do that. They want to hit you. They want to make you sniff it, right? They want to give you some chin music. That's what they used to say, chin music. I was like, what's that? They want the ball to hit you in the chin or hit you in the nose. They wanted to hurt you and then get you out. And I always just admired anyone who would put themselves out there against the best for them to be the best. But this is what he said to me. He said, you know, he goes, yeah, you know, it's like, I'm not Australian accent, he's from New Zealand. And he used to say, I picture us in the trenches in the First World War, our team. And I'm going, right, lads, let's go over the top and let's go. And I go over the top and I look back and everyone's still there because they don't want to go. He said, maybe there's one or two players that will go over the top, but everyone else will stay where they are. Now, why? Well, that's a good question, right? I didn't know for everyone, but I think we've kind of worked out that a lot of them were just frightened to step into the fray of putting yourself in a situation where you don't always know what's happening. But that was the first proper team I worked with. So forgive me for rambling on.
No, I love that. Thank you very much. So when you were a sport obsessed kid who had more enthusiasm than talent, it sounds like, with respect, at which point did you realise actually, was there like a moment you're like, I want to be involved in this world, but I'm not going to be able to do it on the pitch or, in front of the stumps, I'm going to have to do it behind the scenes somewhere. Did you make that conscious thought, or was it just your natural inquisitiveness that led you to the psychology side of things?
It wasn't a real decision. It kind of happened. So I, the only reason I wasn't good, I had the talent, but I really had some issues with the narrative in my head. You know, that's why I have a duck on my head, right? You know, the duck represents the part of me that is frightened. I was very self-conscious as a child. So I didn't realize that I was talking to, I'm not joking. I remember studied psychology and I didn't understand internal dialogue until I studied neuro-linguistic programming, which some of you here I know have studied. I studied that, traveled with Richard Bandler. I became very friendly with Paul McKenna. Paul McKenna and I used to hypnotize athletes together, which was really interesting. But in answer to your question, it wasn't so much that. It's just when I started to learn some skills that I thought I never applied it to myself, James. I was really kind of one of those people that learned personal development so I could do it on other people and not do it to myself. And, you know, I had a kind of a bit of a wake up call a few years down the line, But I learned some skills that I just started practicing on people. And then just by chance, I was at the Cheltenham Cricket Festival. This Cheltenham is where I did my degrees. And I met a cricket player called Keith Arthurton, who used to play for the West Indies. And in the Cricket World Cup, he got zero. He was out for 0-1 and then zero. And he was devastated. He didn't want to pick up a bat again. And he was there just watching. And I told him about some of the work. He said, could you help me? So I said, absolutely. So I went and met him at High Wycombe Cricket Club, which he'd just been asked to play. And this is no lie. I hypnotized him because at that point, I'd become pretty proficient at hypnosis. I hypnotized him for him to imagine he was Viv Richards. Now, Viv Richards is just one of my absolute heroes. And if you don't know who Viv Richards is, then watch the film.
Legend, about as good as it gets in the cricket world.
Oh yeah, I think he's in my top five sports people of all time. There's an amazing James called Fire in Babylon, and I would encourage everyone to watch that film. It's one of the greatest films I've ever seen. But I hypnotized him for him to imagine that he was Viv Richards. And the strange thing was, Keith Arthurton was a left-handed batsman, and Viv Richards was a right-handed batsman. But I think in that game he got 176. And it's when I really knew I was onto something was when he told me afterwards that when he was batting, if in cricket you hit the ball behind you, the batsman at the other end, he calls whether you run. And he said, Keith, yes. And Keith went to himself, who's Keith? Because he honestly was convinced he was Viv Richards. And it was at that point, that was a big epiphany for me. Oh my God, this stuff works, man. I want to get really good at this. And that's where I became an elite in what I was doing, because I just thought, you know what, if this stuff works, I've got to work with everyone I possibly can. And that almost killed me, but that's another story. So yeah, hope that answers your question.
So the question of, you know, you've got a very negative internal dialogue. You've got the duck in your head. What's the duck saying the first time that, you know, that Keith goes out to bat at Wycombe? You know, are you going, oh my God, what are you doing here?
Because now
you're not only responsible for your own outcome, you're responsible for somebody else's as well.
What a great question. The worst was with working with Ron Donovan, 2 years working with Ronnie and then going on the road with him wherever he went. I couldn't watch. That's how, you know, I needed to work on myself, because what sort of an example was I was asking him to do something I couldn't do myself. I remember when he was in Sheffield, and actually, when I worked with him, he won 3 tournaments back to back, which he'd never done before. And I still don't think he's ever done that. 3 tournaments and then in the World Championships that year, he lost in the first round, and he got a 147, which is, for those of you that know snooker, that's a big thing. But he went into a massive depression, and he kind of blamed me a little bit for that as well, which was quite interesting, which again is another story. But when you talk about teams, going back to, you know, people think Ronnie's an individual. Look, one of the first things I did was watch and observe, you know, great people in the work that I do. We don't say, believe it or not, we don't say much in the beginning. We just watch, we observe, we listen. And I could just see all of these people around him that were just like hangers on, who just wanted to be with Ronnie, my mate Ronnie. And I just said to him, I remember the day I said to him, Ronnie, who are all these people? And he felt responsible for them. So what we did with him was build a team of people around him so that he could just focus on what he needed to focus on. But I've had to learn, you know, even coming on here today, James, you know, I was nervous. I was, you know, I have that internal dialogue, but I'm also excited, you know, so it's the battle that we all have. I've learned what my mind does. So we can come on here and we can tell everyone this is what everyone needs to do, but we don't know everybody. And I think we should be very careful when we give blanket information and say everyone is like this, because who the hell are we to say what everyone is like? We don't know what everyone, there's massive generalizations, but that's one of the things I've had to learn, is to forget everything I know, to be very curious when you're working with someone and to ask the questions and just be open to the possibilities that exist for someone to improve their performance.
What was the duck saying this morning to you then?
Good. James, I forget. You're obviously you're very good at asking questions, and you know when I came to to come and see you guys. I'm not deflecting the question. I just want to get it
you
out.
You are. You're playing for time.
Okay. I know what you do. When I came to meet James, Ashley, and Paul, it was fantastic. I love you guys. I love this room. This has to be one of the most popular rooms in the whole of Clubhouse. If you look at statistically the numbers that come every week, people love this room. They love you. They love what you do. What was my duck saying to me this morning? I think it's so automatic that often I don't even realize what I've said, but it's the feeling. It's the feeling of almost like butterflies that are flying all over the place. It's the, oh dear, this, what happens if, you know, it's that kind of quick thought that comes that's followed by the feeling. And of all the work that I do with athletes or with anyone, the big thing I would say in 99.9% of the cases is learning how to think greater than you feel. Learning how to think greater than you feel, because those thoughts will always come. And there's seven things I can share with people if they want some sort of structure around what I'm saying. But learning how to think greater than you feel is essential, because if you don't do that, you'll just be a victim of your old thoughts. And that's why things like meditation and mindfulness are so important, because that's how you kind of get to know yourself. You get to know your mind. You get to know what your mind is doing. And James, you know, I had a coach for 16 years who I worked with. 16 years of my life. He was like Mr. Miyagi in Karate Kid. He even looked like him, right? He was from the Philippines. His name was Raphael. He was 8 of 16 brothers and sisters. And he dedicated his life to helping me. He even asked my parents if he had permission to tell me what to do. I traveled around the world with him, and I learned so much from him about performance. And I'd said this when I came on The Breakfast with the Winners, so forgive me if some of you have heard me say this before. But he was so wise. He said to me, "What's the nature of the human mind?" And I basically gave him an answer, and he kind of laughed, and he said, "What does your mind do?" And I kind of gave him another answer, and he just laughed at me. He said, "Look, your mind just plays tricks on you. Your mind is a very powerful tool. If you put it somewhere, you can do great things with your mind. Everyone knows that. When you really focus on something, when you give something your all, real focus, great things can happen. But your mind plays tricks on you, like, you know, the duck that's talking to you, or as Dr. Stephen Peters calls it, the chimp paradox, the chimp in your brain. He said, if you can't find humor in what you're thinking, if you can't see the funny side of what you're thinking, you will always be a victim to it. Now, there's a disclaimer here, and this is something I've learned, that, you know, my brother is a psychotherapist, and I talk to him about this a lot. We talk about, you know, the experience of being a human being. For most people who have experienced trauma in their life, serious trauma, whether that was one event or a series of events, that's something that often people need to learn how to make sense of or deal with in a way that it doesn't affect their future. Because, of course, we are a product of what has happened to us. And with Ronnie, you know, I remember being with Ronnie once when he was competing in the UK Championships in York, and he was just in the bath. I never forget this. He was in the bath, right? I wasn't in the bath with him. And he screamed. He just screamed out loud. And I thought, whoa, well, you know, what's going on here? So I said, you were right. And he kind of said, yeah. And we'd had a conversation, and it kind of woke him up to the fact that, you know, Ronnie's dad committed murder when Ronnie was 14 or 15 years old. And you can imagine if that happened to you as a child, that's going to be a traumatic experience for you. And what Ronnie realized was that he'd been playing for his dad, you know, and every time he lost, he felt like he was letting his dad down. And you can imagine that's going to affect someone. And that's why often elite performers need people around them. I mean, even with like Coach G, I'd be great if we can hear from him a little bit later on. But those of you that don't know this guy's story, I mean, this is a guy that was just written off. It's like Rocky. You know, people laughed at him and said he was not making a joke of it. That's what people said about Michael Jordan when he stopped playing basketball and took up baseball. They printed a picture of him on the front cover of Sports Illustrated and said, "Michael Jordan is making a mockery of baseball." Excuse me? He said, what's the worst thing that can happen? The worst thing that can happen is I fail. If that's the worst thing that's going to happen, I'm going to do it. So I don't know what your question was, but as you can tell, I'm talking about this stuff.
I'm not sure what the question was either, frankly. I don't think it really matters, to be fair. I mean, the answer is that good. Maybe the question is irrelevant. Maybe the question just simply becomes the conduit.
Yeah, maybe, maybe.
We
all want techniques. You know, people want me a technique, give me a formula. And I review techniques and formula. But what I've experienced is that most people just change when their perspective changes. And that's why Clubhouse is amazing, because you hear a story of somebody. Stories are more powerful than techniques. I mean, obviously, process is vital. It's absolutely essential. But, you know, to get to the heart of where someone is and what's happened to them in their life, how's it affecting them, what it is that they want, and then going to work on this. And James, it's not easy. And that's why I reckon only 2% of people, that as Napoleon Hill said, in Think and Grow Rich, only 2% of people are really very driven by their legacy, driven by who they're going to become. And I'm always been fascinated by that. And I try to help everybody. And I realize, what's the point trying to help everybody? There's no point, because some people, they're not ready, or it's none of my business, or I'm not the right person. But I just love to work with people that just want to get better and leave a legacy on this earth. And that is why the New Zealand rugby team is the greatest team in history. I worked with Zinzan Brook a few years ago, and I picked his brain. It was coming out of his, you know, I just was asking him question after question after having read the book Legacy. Again, I'm sure Coach G will be a testament to this, because he's played against them. If you play rugby for New Zealand, this is a country, what's the population of New Zealand? Is it 5 million? Or is it, I don't know, it's not
something
many.
Like that. It's small, isn't it?
Yeah. And the one thing that you know about the rugby team is whether you play one game or 100 games, is you leave that team in a better place than when you started playing for them. That's legacy. And I think, again, I can't speak for everybody, but I would imagine every single person in this room is interested in a legacy, some description. They want to leave a mark, right? They want to leave something behind that makes a difference to other people's lives, that's more than bricks and mortar, even though most of us would love to do that. But very few people will. They say the richest land in the world is the graveyard. I don't know who said that, but someone did. And it's like, why? Well, maybe because so many people died with all of these things that they wanted to do, but they never did. So back to you, James.
Thank you very much, co-host Pete. Pete, a minute ago, you mentioned there's 7 steps that you would use around a sort of developing a peak performance mindset. Could you share those steps with us?
Yeah, of course. I just wanted to just go back to, you said about how, you know, 6,000 people. So 6,000 people, I think you know that I have a free 30-day program. Now, I would imagine, I don't know, what's 2% of 6,000?
300.
I don't know. Wow, that's amazing. So if we said to those 6,000 people, here's a free program for you to do, a 30-day program, I guarantee, I would imagine it's less than 600. And that just, me, is so fascinating that if I was me and I was listening to me, I'd be thinking, whatever this guy has to say, I need to listen to him. But that's just me. And I might not be the right person for everybody, but I'm just so curious as to when people see what I've dedicated my life to doing, from all the books I've read, the people I've worked with, why people wouldn't want to engage with what I have. You can listen to me and it's great. And if it inspires you, then I'm happy, but I don't think it will inspire you. It will just motivate you. And motivation is just movement. It will move you. But very soon you'll just move back to doing everything that you were doing before. And that's part of the human experience. That's part of just who we are, which I'll kind of elaborate a little bit more. But just want to be totally honest here, James. It's great to be here, but I'm looking for people who, whether they engage with my material or whoever's material, they just want to get better and want to keep getting better, no matter what. Just keep getting better mentally, physically, emotionally, to be a better, you know, If you ask people where they wanted to make improvements, you talk about elite level. How many of us would like to be more elite with our health? You know, with our health and our energy, we call it the big three. With our relationships, we'd like to be better with our partners, our friends, our family, and our wealth and our work. So we talk about all these elite performers, and that's one of the reasons I went down that road to work with those people, because I was curious, what can you learn from these people that you can teach to everyday people? Because all of us are competing out there, and it's difficult. It's challenging, right? Every day to get up and to give it your best, mentally, physically, emotionally. I just love it when you see people that are just driven to improve and get better. But I've said enough. In terms of there's kind of seven steps that I really love to work with people on. The first is legacy. You know, number one is all about legacy. And I think sometimes it might be a bit overpowering for some people, but what a great question when you work with someone for the first time and you talk about legacy in terms of, you know, Stephen Covey talks about this, the seven habits of highly effective people. There's actually an eighth habit. The eighth habit is when you found yourself, you found your voice, and then you want to help other people find theirs, which is why I love Clubhouse, you know, connecting people, but helping other people find their voice, find their greatness. And I know that there's so many people on this stage. That's what we do, right? Give me a flash if that's what you do. That's what Lucy N does. I mean, that's what she's dedicated her life to do. And that's what Coach G does. That's what we all do. I need to pull to refresh so I can just actually, that's what we do. Right? That's what Alan does. We've dedicated our life to helping people find their voice. But we know finding ours is sometimes we forget. I can't say for everyone, but I know sometimes I forget what's my legacy. So to begin with the end in mind is the second habit. And what he asks you to do is imagine that you're at your funeral and you're watching what's going on and you're hearing the eulogies. You're hearing what people are saying about you. So if I'm working with an elite level performer, that's one of the first questions I have with them. But now I've learned to take that to another level, having got to know Dr. John DeMartini, who takes it to another level in terms of what do you want the legacy of your life to be in 1,000 years? You know, and I mean, I don't know, James, what do you want the legacy of your life to be in? People will still be listening to your podcast. Maybe Breakfast with Winners will still be going on and your great, 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 great Ashley Shipman's great, 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 great grandson is running it. I mean, what do you want the legacy of your life to be in 1,000 years time?
Oh, don't switch on me. We talk about you. This is what you do. As a peak performance psychologist, you are the master of switching the conversation. But you do it because you're genuinely interested. But I'm going to switch it back on you because I do not have a good answer. Leave me alone, Pete. Deliver the goods. Don't take from me. Just give to me.
I'm so sorry. My duck is going crazy. I've let everybody down.
Well, shut your duck up and carry on.
Shut the duck up. So that's a conversation that I've had with many, many, many athletes, but not 1,000 years. That's been a more of a recent thing. But talking about that in terms of the legacy and then giving them some examples of athletes and who have left legacies and what they wanted to leave behind. And then getting them to realize that legacy... For some of the greatest athletes, I watched a documentary about Pele recently. Unbelievable. I think it's on Netflix or Amazon Prime. Unbelievable story of what he went through. Making people aware of what people went through to leave a legacy. From, you know, Muhammad Ali, what he went through to leave a legacy. So it all starts with that. It all starts with making people realize there's a bigger game to play. And for most of them, they then start to realize it's much more than just them, but it all starts with them. If they want to leave a mark, if they want to be the very best that they can be, it comes at a price. So we talk about that first. And I would encourage everyone here who wants to be a high performer, begin with the end in mind. Take a few moments today and actually think about you at your own funeral. What do you want people to be saying about you? How will that make you feel when you, because I think most of us are living like we're zombies. I used to watch zombie films as a child and used to think to myself, why am I fascinated with these films? Well, I don't know. But now I think maybe it was because the fact of people just walking around like zombies, just existing and just living in a zone of comfort rather than striving to get better, striving. So that's the first piece. We talk about legacy. And then we start to talk about the stuff that I love, which is identity. Identity, that word means the state of being the same. And what I find with most athletes is what got them here is not going to get them there. There's going to have to be some form of reinvention. Again, Coach G would be I'd love to find out that from him about how he reinvented himself to be better than he was previously. That it's that identifying with who you need to become. I'm sure everyone in this room has heard that exercise where you go, what would you say to your former self? If you could go back in time and you could sit down with your younger self, what conversation would you have? What advice would you give your younger self? Because we carry our younger self with us, but I know we carry our future self. We just don't give it any energy to grow. We don't think about who this person is going to be. And that might be you in a year's time or 3 years' time or 5 years' time. It's up to the athlete. It's up to the performer that you're working with. How does that person move through the world? Could you build a relationship with that person? Could you take counsel from that person? That's the identity piece. And then identity is also great to find out the values that that person has, you know, the values of things like courage and wisdom, and identifying with how you can practice being courageous, how you can practice doing what you need to do. And then the next step is always mindfulness. You know, mindfulness for me is all about awareness, just becoming aware of the experience of being you. And curiosity really is the key, which is another value that I talk with athletes and just high performers. What other values do you want to bring to life? And curiosity, I don't know whether it killed the cat, but curiosity is just about, being curious about your thoughts. Where are these thoughts coming from? And what are those thoughts doing to you in terms of feeling? If we go back to identity, what most people do in the world today, I've got a picture in front of me here. It's actually a map of the world. And I've been sticking pins in all the different countries when I'm on Clubhouse and you meet someone from Timbuktu or Vancouver. But I want everyone in this room to imagine right now, how many people are there in the world right now who don't feel like doing something? And because they don't feel like doing something, guess what? They're not going to do it. So most people are driven by how they feel. Their feelings affect their actions. Their actions create their identity. And they just keep recreating. The challenge is you have to go with your identity first. So you're driven by who you want to become. Your actions are in alignment with your identity and your feelings follow. I don't care what anyone says, but the way I look at it is, if you want something enough and you know something enough has to happen, then how you feel about it is not important. It's just forget it. Forget how you feel. Identify with what you want. And by the way, most of the feelings we want to feel, they come anyway as a result of effort, because life is motion. So that piece about mindfulness, becoming aware and being able to talk about that. And Brené Brown is brilliant at giving people, she's been amazing, this lady. If you haven't come across her, I would definitely get involved with her work. When she talks about, you know, armoring up, that what most people do, and that's what I saw in that Kent dressing room, James, when I walked in there, I saw people that didn't want to tell you anything about themselves. But when things get really bad, that's where some of them literally then ask for help. It's crazy, right? That we have to often wait for a disaster, a prognosis, a diagnosis for us to, you know, to decide to want to open up. But my point is this, if you're not mindful of what you're holding on to, you're never going to let your creativity, you're never going to let your real power come out. And that's what I've seen with the greatest athletes who I've worked with, but actually so many of them I've met. They're very vulnerable people. Cristiano Ronaldo is a fantastic example of that. People have no idea how humble that person is, and he's driven by a desire to be the best that he can be. Healthy competition with Messi. He doesn't want to be better than Messi. He wants to be better, the best he can be. But that mindfulness piece is the piece which often people just don't, they just rely on talent. You know, they don't rely on waking up. And then the next, you know, the fourth step in this kind of seven steps for high achievement is definitely concentration. And that comes from meditation, really, just learning how to concentrate your attention, because the mind plays tricks on us. And that the elite of the elite, I've noticed them, you know, with like Ronnie O'Sullivan, he'll just turn his phone off. He'll turn it off for days. If he's practicing, he doesn't want to put his attention out there. He's brilliant at really, really, really focusing. He's actually one of the easiest people I've ever had to hypnotize, because he knows how to go into a zone where you're very focused. So concentration. And then the next step is insight. Insight is all about really, how was the best way for me to explain this? Well, insight has a lot to do with how you're feeling. So if I just go back a step, when I talked about being driven by your identity of who you want to be, your actions being in alignment with that and feelings follow, the insight is through practice, through performing, that afterwards you just have this, it's almost like an experimenter. You're detached from what you're doing when you're looking at it back, and to ask questions around what are the insights, what are you learning? That's the thing. What are you learning about yourself? And often, I don't know how many of you have ever watched Strictly Come Dancing, but the people that often do really well in Strictly are athletes, because athletes know that their greatest insights come from when they make a mistake. And there's this constant drive. I did a podcast with Mark Foster, the world champion swimmer. And I learned so much from him around that kind of insight of mistakes, the insights of learning. So insight for me is all about learning. And then the sixth step is about right effort. You know, the effort of knowing how much to put into what you do. We call it the magnificent seven, the seven of eat right, drink right, think right, talk right, poo right, move right, getting your health in balance, knowing where to put your energy. And for some people, they just don't want to go that deep. And if you really, really want to be the best, it's incredibly, you know, meticulous, and it's hard work for a lot of people. It's very mundane, but the mundane leads to the sublime. And I could talk about these, you know, for a lot longer than I am, but, you know, another time perhaps. But the last is trust. And this might come as quite controversial, but I'm not talking about trusting anybody else. I don't think there's any point trusting anybody in life. I honestly don't. And people don't like it. I didn't like it when I first heard that from my coach. He just said, don't, what's the point of trusting people? Let people be who they are. It's none of your business. And the reason he said that was because he said, people will always let themselves down. That's just the nature of a human being. They let themselves down. They have great intentions and great effort, great ideas, but they'll let them, let people be who they are. Learn to trust yourself. Learn to believe in yourself. Learn to believe in the process. This is one of the conversations I had with the sniper, with Beju, you know, who's fantastic at what he does. Unreal, that guy, what he does, helping people get some acceleration and make stuff happen. We had a conversation around this about faith, you know, and I think there's two types of faith, and that this is a bit spiritual for some people, but, you know, knowing that when you do good things and you kind of get into the space of you practice, you perform, that it will, things will just come to you when you're ready. But then also trusting in the process, that you've done the work, so that when you go out to compete, you just let it happen. And when England play football today, I believe that that's what they do. I believe England will win Euro, I almost said Euro 96, but we're not in 96. We're in Euro 2020 in 2021. So those seven steps: legacy, identity, mindfulness, concentration, insight, right effort, and trust. Thanks a lot, James.
Absolutely loved it. I think this has probably been one of the most powerful conversations we've ever had on the Daily Habits of High Performance. So thank you very much for that, my friends. Modern Speakers, if you enjoyed that, if you took mega value, give us a flash of the mics. And by the way, what I also want to do is I'm going to close the hand raise off, and I'm going to open it back up. If you got huge, huge value from that, stick your hand in the air right now. If you enjoyed that, if you've taken a tangible, actionable learning from that session, 10 people, 17 people, 20 people, keep putting your hands in the air if you took something from that. And what I want you to also do, guys, I very, very rarely do this, and we very rarely do this as the Winners Club, but if you are enjoying this conversation, if you think there's people within your network that need to be hearing the mindset insights that Peter's sharing this morning, click that little plus button in the bottom right hand corner of your screen and invite a couple of people in. Now, don't spam everybody, see that the red bar comes up and the Clubhouse tell you off, but if you think, oh, do you know what, Bob needs to hear that, Jane needs to hear that, Frank needs to hear that, Julie needs to hear that, and, you know, there can be other names, of course, but individually just invite someone. If you're like, do you know what, that person's in a bit of a slump, they need a hand, they need some help, then make sure you invite them in. That's fantastic. Loads of people sticking their hands up. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mods and Speakers, as well. We're going to open up it to Q&A now with Pete. For a little while about this particular subject, which is going to be fascinating. I'm really looking forward to this. We've now had 8,000 people who have listened into the room. 600 currently tuned in right now. So this has been a mega popular subject. So Pete, thank you for being here. Guys, just one more time, I want to make sure that you go and give Pete a follow right now. He is Pete with the red duck on his head in the top row in the middle right now. Click on his face here. And he's also got his Instagram and his Twitter, I believe, linked up. No, is it just his Insta? Yeah, wherever. Go to his Instagram and give him a follow on his Instagram. And if you've got any questions or queries, I'd love to know. I'd love to see happen. I'd love for you to tag Pete on Instagram and let him know your number one takeaway. I've already had a couple of people doing it. So if you've got a serious takeaway that you've just learned from Pete, tag him on Insta stories, and so we can share that out as well. Give me a tag as well if you want, and I'll share that out as well, because it'd be great to get a wash of positive motivation and inspiration going out across social media this morning on behalf of what Pete has just shared. I really, really appreciate it. And obviously, if you want to find out more information about Pete and what he's doing with his challenge, click onto his face and you can find all the details in there as well. Right, mods and speakers. Pete, I was already hyped up for the flipping football, man, but I'm even more hyped up now. I'm going to play a bit of a theme tune. Who's ready for the football? Who's ready for peak performance? Oh, I can't flipping wait. Pete's got me even more hyped up now. Let's have some crowd sound effects. Oi, oi! Right, I'll stop that. Sorry, I got too excited. Right, Mods and Speaks, if you've got a question you'd love to put to Pete or a comment you'd love to put to Pete, let's go for it. Alan, coming to you first, mate.
Thanks, James. Appreciate it. Morning, Pete. How you doing, brother? Good morning to everybody. A beautiful Sunday morning. I haven't got a question. Pete, I just want to say I love you, man. You know, I've loved your work for a long time, and I loved what you said today. And I love the fact you support Liverpool. Oh, my God, that's why I love you too. I've been supporting Liverpool since I was nine years of age. My dad supported Liverpool. My mother supported United. That was always interesting when we played each other. And
Let me tell you a story about that, which I think you'll find really interesting. So people often ask me, who's the greatest footballer you ever saw? And I say, John Barnes, right? I saw his first game for Liverpool, Arsenal. And then people say, well, he was terrible for England. But he had actually scored probably the greatest England goal against Brazil in the first game. But I've spoken to John Barnes, and it was fascinating because this won't surprise you, Alan, but for everybody else, we often assume that we know what's best. And when we often play for institutions that are bigger than us, you have to play the game. And what John Barnes said to me, he said, is that when he played for England for the first time, he was told what to do. He was given a role. This is your role. Yet he had never been given a role before apart from just go and play. Go where you want, do what you want, because you're John Barnes. And that really messed him up because he wasn't that type of person where he thinking would kind of drive him a bit potty. He was like a very instinctive person. So, yeah, I love your work too, Alan. I love who you are, what you stand for. We come from a very similar place, my friend.
Thanks, my man. I appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Winners Club. If you have taken some practical lessons and learnings from some of the most impactful conversations on Clubhouse, then we would love your support for this show by leaving us a 5-star review wherever you download your podcasts.